welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. To begin that hour, we'll talk all things Titans and all things NFL playoffs with him. Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, and the Predators pre- and post-game shows will join us at 9 o'clock, and we'll get into the latest in the Nashville Predators with him. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, make sure you're listening in this hour. We'll have your cue to call for your chance to win some tickets to see the Predators tonight take on the Carolina Hurricanes at Bridgestone Arena. So we'll have that cue to call for you this hour. So make sure that you're tuning in. Joe Rexroad, we've talked about Arthur Smith and the offensive coordinator position now open for the Tennessee Titans. And as you look at candidates to potentially replace Arthur Smith, some interesting names out there, and you could take it a variety of different directions. You've got in-house candidates, maybe a guy like Pat O'Hara, the quarterback's coach, Keith Carter, the offensive lines coach, Tony Dews, Todd Downing. I mean, a bunch of different names that you could throw out there in-house if Vrabel wants to go that route and keep things going in this offense and try to have some sort of continuity there. There are also some interesting names outside of the organization, and we've heard about maybe the Titans checking in on some names outside of the organization, and some former NFL head coaches come to mind. Doug Peterson is available. Anthony Lynn right now is available as well. So, Joe, as you look at the offensive coordinator position for the Titans, which is now open, who are your candidates to replace Arthur Smith, and how do you think Mike Vrabel goes about handling this, given his history and given how productive this offense has been for the past 2 years?
Yeah, well, you just listed two for sure that are absolutely worth discussion. I mean, Doug Peterson, Anthony Lynn, those guys have been successful coordinators. They've obviously, Peterson's won a Super Bowl as a head coach. He's a really interesting case, kind of an example of how quickly things can get away from you in this league. I would say his job security would have been right in the top, you know, crust, top percentage of the league just a couple years ago, yeah. And he's out. You know, Anthony Lynn, I mean, it's a tough go for him with the Chargers, but he's been a good OC. I would throw out Pep Hamilton, who was Lynn's OC.
Yeah.
A guy who Andrew Luck had his best football under Pep Hamilton. Pep Hamilton, largely the guy who worked with Justin Herbert this year. A guy who's been all around. He's been at Alabama, Harbaugh. He's been with Harbaugh at Michigan. I mean, this is a guy who has done really good things with quarterbacks and is available from the Chargers, you know, firing. So, I mean, those three are there. Like you said, you got the internal candidates. I will say, you know, another thing I look at, see, it goes two ways with the Lions. So when someone goes in, you're like, oh boy, you know, what's going to happen to that player or coach, and what could they have been in a functional organization? But there are a lot of good people who come out of there too and who are better elsewhere. I think Daryl Bevel was a good OC for the yeah. Lions. I think he's worth a look. He actually was right there as a legit finalist, you know, for the job. And, you know, he's a guy who he's been around as well too, including Seattle, but he's done some good things. You know, a guy who Deshaun Watson has been vocal about in terms of support, a guy who has helped him, you know, develop and obviously that offense be good with all kinds of different situations going on personnel wise is Tim Kelly. Another guy, you know, we've talked about, like, you know, Bill O'Brien, is he going to be the guy? Vrabel bring him in here. You know, Tim Kelly is someone to keep in mind as well to me. He's, I mean, again, done really good things there, and you could do worse than that. And I'm not totally sure, as I say it, and I should have looked this up before, but like the connection with him and Vrabel. But that's, you know, obviously you think about people who, you think about people who Vrabel has come across. And by the way, yeah, I mean, they worked together. He was a QC guy. And then he was assistant OL coach. And his last year when Vrabel was DC, he was the Texans tight ends coach. So certainly there's familiarity there. If there's a good relationship there, you know, that could be someone on a short list.
Yeah, and look, I think Anthony Lynn, Doug Peterson, two names that I would call, and Anthony Lynn has been rumored to have been contacted by the Seahawks for their potential offensive coordinator opening as well. Maybe he comes in and joins the fold with Russell Wilson. But you bring up familiarity, Joe, and there's an interesting name that Adam Sparks of the Tennessean brought up over the weekend, and that's Tom Herman. Now, Tom Herman obviously has not coached in the NFL, but you think back to Vrabel's time at Ohio State, and Herman was the offensive coordinator while Vrabel was on that staff, and they've stayed in touch over the years. And according to Sparks, last offseason, Vrabel was the keynote speaker for Herman's coaching clinic at Texas. So that's a very interesting name. Obviously, Tom Herman's done a lot of good things at the college level and didn't work out at Texas, I guess, through the way that Texas hoped that it would. But what do you think maybe of that name, an outside-the-box name of Tom Herman coming in, maybe being a potential fit as offensive coordinator for the Titans?
Yeah, I think that's a good name to have on the list. You know, with Herman, it's somewhat like Urban Meyer, obviously. You know, there's does his stuff work in the NFL? You know, it's very quarterback run heavy. But again, I think it's the same thing goes with Urban. I mean, you understand what league you're in and you're going to adjust things. And it's not like you're just married to quarterback run to the extent that you can't do other things. That would be brought up with Herman, but yeah, I mean, I think that's a thought for sure. I still like the coordinator who has demonstrated something at this level.
Yeah,
not that the guy coming from college can't work out. You know, if the Titans reportedly reached out to Tony Elliott from Clemson, you know, and to try to see on that front now. That's also, I mean, that offense was not the Ohio State / like Texas offense, but I think that's a valid name to bring up for sure. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here.
There are, and some of those possibilities include in-house candidates, and I mentioned a few of them before: Keith Carter, offensive lines coach; Pat O'Hara, quarterbacks coach right now for the Titans; Todd Downing, their tight ends coach. So, Joe, as you go through the staff here for the Titans, if Vrabel does go that way and it is a promotion from within, who do you think the most likely candidate is that's already there in-house with the Titans?
Well, you know, it's hard because Downing is the guy who has the experience. Now, he also got scapegoated in 17 when Carr and the Raiders took a step back. That was a highly hyped player and offense going into the 2017 season, and of course it did not go well. So he got, you know, he had a brief you know, moment there as an OC. It didn't work out, but he has been an OC. Also the tight ends coach, and this was when Arthur Smith was brought up. This was, I think it was actually Vrabel who made this point. You know, the tight ends coach is very involved in both the run and pass game with that position. So you really have your hands in everything. So it kind of makes sense as a point of promotion, but he's also, you know, been around less time than other guys who could, you know, on the staff. So I'm not, you know, 'cause they obviously brought him in to replace Smith when Smith got promoted. So I'd still, I think, start there. You know, another question here, Robbie, is who's Arthur Smith targeting to take with him?
Yeah,
I'm sure somebody, and you know, and it's do any of these guys, are any of these guys potentially going to be his OC? Although, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that there was an outsider who may have been reported as a name he might bring with him as OC. Actually, was it LaFleur's brother? I see that right?
No, I think LaFleur's brother has gotten a job in San Francisco, I believe. Let me look this up.
He's been in San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in San Francisco with Shanahan. I could be wrong. Somebody was looking to hire LaFleur's brother as a promotion. But, that's what it is. He's going with Robert Saleh, so there you go. So he's going with him to the Jets to be his OC.
God bless him.
So the LaFleurs taking over the league. But yeah, like, you know, does Arthur Smith want any of these guys to be his OC? If one of these guys was, because now, you know, in the past, you know, the Titans could block that. They can't now. If one of these guys has an offer to be, if you are, you know, let's say you're Keith Carter and you could be the Titans or Falcons OC, who would you pick?
I mean, I'm going Titans.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Henry, you've got Brown, you got Tannehill, you got an offense that's been rolling. I would go Titans. Now, I look, there are a lot of intriguing options with the Falcons as well, obviously, with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Matt Ryan. But I think at this point, I would probably still stick with the Titans, just based on how productive this offense has been the last couple of years. But it's close.
Yeah, like I like the idea of certainly with D coordinator, but even with OC, I think, you know, the idea of bringing in someone out with fresh stuff is, I think it's appealing. And there are some, as we've talked about, there are some really good names out there, but also you have to look at what the Titans have done the last couple of years and think that it's a staff situation, not just Arthur Smith. And so if you were going to go internal, when things are going that well, I think it makes more sense to go internal.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the challenge that Vrabel has. Because I do think there are obviously more qualified candidates outside of the organization that you could bring in. I mean, two guys we talked about, Anthony Lynn and Doug Peterson, number one, have been really good coordinators, but also have been head coaches in this league. So there are obviously qualified candidates you could bring in. The question is, to me, if you're Vrabel, how much do you value that and how much do you value the continuity? Because I do think, you know, having some new ideas, having a fresh look about things offensively is intriguing. And we talked about that a little bit with Bill O'Brien when we were talking about him maybe coming in and being the OC before he decided to go on with Alabama and Nick Saban. Is, you know, Bill O'Brien comes in, obviously the offense that they've been running in Houston is not the same as the offense the Titans are running right now. So do you want to jeopardize what you've been able to do on the ground? But to have that fresh perspective also could help the offense. So that balance, to me, if you're Vrabel, is going to be very interesting to see how he handles that, because obviously, if you look at this offense with Tannehill and Henry and everything they did under Arthur Smith, I don't think you're going to want to change a whole lot. I mean, there's a proven formula that's worked with this group. But it never hurts to have, you know, fresh ideas, fresh eyes looking at an offense, and kind of the feel for the game as a play caller. That maybe is the biggest question, is who do you feel comfortable about having a good feel for the game of when to call plays, the right moments to kind of change things up. Obviously, you didn't know that with Arthur Smith kind of heading in, and that was the big knock on him the first part of the season when Mariota was the quarterback, is this guy ready for this? Like, is he ready for this opportunity? Obviously, we found out that he is, but I'm very fascinated to see how Mike Vrabel handles that balance.
Yeah, well, and that's a great point, because you can have someone who is just like him who says, hey, I really want this job, and he's been impressive as a coach, and you feel like he can handle it and they can plan it and scheme it, but that play calling on game day is still something you don't know about. With some of these outside people, you do know about it. I mean, you've got a track record and some good track records out there. I mean, you're not guaranteed to hit every time you do this and bring in a someone who's never called plays and have success. You know, Vrabel so far has hired two offensive coordinators, and neither of them had ever called plays previously. And one of them had an okay season here and is now about to maybe win a Super Bowl as a head coach. And then the other one has just got a head coaching job. That's a heck of a hit record of your OCs getting other jobs.
Yeah.
But it may not be the worst thing in the world to have an OC who you know has been a successful play caller in this league before.
My one hope out of this entire thing is that Mike Vrabel and John Robinson don't just settle for someone in-house and just go next man up if that person is not the best candidate. If there's a candidate out there that is the best candidate and it's out of the building, then hire that person. Because what I don't want to have happen is what happened in 2009 to the Titans defense when Jim Schwartz left and they promoted Chuck Cecil, and Chuck Cecil was
abysmal. Man, was that a disaster.
He was abysmal as the defensive coordinator that year. So do not just settle for the in-house candidate if that candidate is not the best one.
I hear you. And the thing is, it's just going to be, you know, obviously it'll be hard to tell. We'll find out next year, because when he promoted Arthur Smith, there was a whole bunch of, oh, really? You couldn't have gone out and gotten someone? You're doing the tight ends coach? Obviously, good instincts for Vrabel there. But I agree, if he's just, it's like, if it's just like, well, let's just go internal, you know, because it's gone well, that could backfire for sure.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porath here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about Arthur Smith and his departure from the Titans to become the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And obviously, that leaves a job opening for the Tennessee Titans. They're going to need to find an offensive coordinator as they progress through this offseason. So, Joe, as you look at this offense, obviously with Tannehill and Henry and A.J. Brown and how productive they've been over the last two seasons, if you're a Titans fan today and you're looking forward to next season and trying to figure out what this offense is going to look like without Arthur Smith, how concerned should you be? How big of a loss is this for the Titans with Arthur Smith at the offensive coordinator position?
Well, it's a loss, and obviously, if I think your mind would immediately go to what happened when you lost your last coordinator.
Yeah.
Now, I think the difference there is again, I think that the personnel moves to try to improve that defense actually did the opposite. So, you know, I think if you and there are a lot of questions in free agency, of course, you know, Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, but if you're able to bring most of that offense back, here's one thing. It'll be easy to judge the next OC because we know how potent and lethal this offense has been with that collection of players. You know, so the bar is very high for the next OC. But I have to think they'll miss him. You know, again, I thought that he was a tremendous play caller. That's not something you can predict when you hire him. But clearly he and Tannehill had a great thing together, and you just don't know with if you bring someone in, you know, how exactly that will work out. I mean, there's a blueprint here for this offense to succeed. Just do exactly what that dude did. Thing is, though, this league evolves and it's constantly evolving, and you've got to take more steps forward if you're going to take over this offense. And there's no guarantee the next person is going to be able to do that successfully.
Well, and it's interesting, like the next guy, no matter who it is, it has got to come in and immediately establish a rapport with Ryan Tannehill. Because I thought, to me, just from an outsider looking in, it was pretty clear to see that Arthur Smith and Tannehill had gotten to the point where they were just on the same page all the time. Like that sequence in Houston, I go back and think about that all the time, just how brilliant it was with, number one, the confidence Arthur Smith had in Ryan Tannehill to call that play, but just dialing up that pass to A.J. Brown to eventually set up the game-winning field goal by Sloman. I mean, that was just one example of, I think, a lot of examples, whether it was with Derrick Henry and Arthur Smith or obviously even more importantly with the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith, where they were completely aligned, they were absolutely on the same page. And regardless of whether it's an in-house candidate or you go outside of the organization and bring somebody else in, that relationship is very important because we've seen what it looks like when Ryan Tannehill is not on the same page with his offensive coordinator and his coaching staff in Miami. And I realize, I mean, that was a long time ago. These are two completely different situations, and the personnel with this Titans offense is very, very good. But regardless of who the next coordinator is, you've got to establish a comfortability with Ryan Tannehill right from the jump and a trust factor there, because it was pretty obvious that he had that with Arthur Smith, and we saw the results of that on the field.
Yeah, so speaking of those names, Stillman threw out there, Bill Lazor, Bears OC. That, trust me, that's not the answer. That did not go well for Tannehill and Lazor in Miami. And obviously, Gase, you know, the funny thing, we didn't mention Adam Gase. He's out there, everybody.
No, stay away.
I think it'd be exciting to have a fellow alum
of
the Marshall, Michigan Youth Football League.
No, it would not.
A fellow Michigan State alum, Adam Gase.
That's right.
Have I ever told you guys I've been to the bar with him, by the way?
No.
We'll tell that story another time.
Do you have his phone number?
I don't have his phone number. You know, the thing is, Gase loved Tannehill, and Tannehill's best season was 2016 under Gase. That team got to the playoffs, but he blew his knee and didn't play in the playoffs. But that was like his breakout. Whoa, this guy actually could be, you know, a star quarterback in this league under Gase. So I'm just throwing it out there. But, you know, it's funny, like, the thing with Arthur Smith that you see, I don't, you know, if you guys look around on social media over the weekend, how many Titans players, you know, were tweeting support or nice things about him as he got this job? I saw a lot of it, and he's just a guy who got along with everyone.
Yeah.
And man, that's harder to find in this league than you might think. I mean, there's big, big egos in this league. Okay. I mean, let's come on. I mean, massive egos in the coaching ranks, and it's hard to find people who can be universally liked the way Arthur Smith was and respected, which he earned. And so it's a hard replacement. Dean Pease, same kind of thing. Those guys loved him. They loved playing for him. They loved how he explained his game plans and sort of gave players ownership in those plans. Not like every DC out there can just do stuff like that, you know? And so, I mean, I'm not forecasting that the Titans are going to have the same kind of offensive, you know, hard times next year as they had defensive hard times this year. They should be really good next year, but that's whoever comes in here. That's the standard, you know, 30 points a game. You got the players, go do it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, not only that with the offensive coordinator, but also, I mean, we've talked about, you know, what happens with Corey Davis, what happens with Jonnu Smith. The offense could look a little bit different next year with some of these pieces. Now, you would expect, regardless of if it's Corey Davis, or I've heard the name Allen Robinson get tossed out there as well, hopefully you've got, you know, a myriad of weapons to throw the ball to next year if you're Ryan Tannehill. But I think if you're a Titans fan and you're looking around and saying, all right, you know, Arthur Smith is already gone. Corey Davis, who knows what's going to happen with him? Who knows whether or not Jonnu Smith is back here next year? All of a sudden, you're a couple of moves away from the offense being considerably different heading into next season. So I do understand why there could be some concern from a Titans fans and wondering, you know, if this offense is going to be able to get back to the level that we saw it operate at this year. And obviously, as you said, Joe, I mean, that's a pretty high bar and a high standard, but that's going to be the standard for the next offensive coordinator, whoever it is coming in here, fair or unfair.
So should Vrabel be asking Tannehill's input on this?
You know, I'm not a big believer in that, but who knows? Maybe so. Maybe if Tannehill doesn't get the input that he wants, does he pull a Deshaun Watson and want to be out?
Well,
I'm going to go with no.
Well, if he was promised he would have input, and then finds out about stuff in a tweet, then yeah, I'd leave too. He should be ticked off, but yeah, not a lot of that going around. I will say that, like, if Tannehill hears on social media that, like, Bill Lazor is possibly the guy, then I would advise him to quickly make a call and make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, like, please don't bring him in. And surely, you know, John Robinson and the Titans have got to have enough sense not to go down that road. You would think so, but man, what a move that would be. It is going to be fascinating, though. Like, I don't think Ryan Tannehill is just sitting here, you know, shaking in his boots and nervous about what the offense could look like next year. And obviously, we'll wait to see what the Titans do on that front and who they bring in to be the OC. But it is going to be very interesting how quickly they can gel and how different the play calling looks. I wouldn't think it's going to look a whole lot different in terms of the style. Like, obviously, Derrick Henry's still going to be a big part of things. Ryan Tannehill's still going to be very effective in the play-action pass game. A.J. Brown, I think, continuing to grow and continuing to evolve as a receiver. So, I think the baseline of what you want to do offensively doesn't really change regardless of who you bring in, just based on the weapons and the personnel that you have. But that fit that I talked about and that comfortability and just knowing when to call certain plays, that's going to be fascinating. So we'll see what the Titans decide to do on that front. When we come back, we'll dive into the Nashville Predators. UC Saros off to an impressive start this year for the Predators. What does he need to do to convince Preds fans that he's the long-term answer moving forward? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Dubois pass across and a big stop, one made and then a second one made by UC Saros. Ekholm will skate down the remaining time. Predators with a third period explosion, win this game by a 5-2 count.
I thought Juice was, you know, even that first power play they had, I mean, they seamed us. And, you know, the puck's going in the net if you're not getting that type of goaltending tonight on that first power play for them. So he made saves when we had breakdowns. He made multiple saves. I think he's really tracking the puck. I think he reads the play well. So, you know, I think that's good to see. And when Juice is playing his best, those are the components of his game that are really strong.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the game on Saturday. Another win for the Preds. They begin the season 2-0. And UC Soros has been a gigantic part of it so far for the Predators. He stopped 71 of 74 shots to begin the season through the first two games. And some of them have been outstanding. Point blank range. John Hines talked about the power play there where Columbus was zipping the puck around pretty well in the first period on Saturday night. And Joe, it's interesting because Soros has been a guy, obviously, in a different role that hasn't started the season very well in the last couple of years. It's taken him some time to get going, and I think it's very encouraging for the Predators that, obviously, he's the starter this year, and he started off really well. Hot start, really good saves, playing well, tracking the puck well, moving well in net. He was outstanding on Saturday night. A big reason, probably the biggest reason, that they won that game, especially early in the game, when Columbus was getting a lot of good looks offensively. Soros off to an outstanding start.
Yeah, it's encouraging for him to start like this. Like you said, he hasn't started well. He wasn't great in the bubble. I know we talked about it. I think a lot of people did. It's like, you know, after that, it was like, okay, he's been a nice story. It's been a nice gradual rise. They've been able to develop him, you know, through the later years of Pecorine. But what's his highest level? You know, how good can this guy really be? Is this really this your 10-year goalie? You know, or is this going to end up being kind of a stopgap between Rene and whoever the next guy is? You know, and look, I don't have the answer right now at all, but it's an encouraging sign. And I have a hard time. I think he'll always suffer by comparison with Pekka Rinne just because, you know, with the 6'5" and a Vezina winner who's done some of the ridiculous things that Pekka Rinne did in his career. It's hard to follow that up. But I don't have a great feel for the quote-unquote ceiling, which is one of the sports cliches that I use a lot and probably too much. Like, what's the best possible, you know, outcome for UC Soros? How good can he get still? Is he still growing into that? I don't know, but I know that this is a great sign because he is the guy this year for sure, you know, who I think is going to get, you know, more of the work. And this is what you want to see so far.
It is. And look, this is a huge year for him. And we've talked about Pekka Rinne and whether or not this is going to be the last year for him. And we'll see, you know, as Pekka gets more action this year, probably as soon as either maybe tonight or tomorrow against Carolina, that's going to continue to be a storyline. But this is a massive year, I think, for UC Soros because you're kind of in no man's land right now if you're the Predators in terms of what you're going to do at the long-term position of goaltender. Like, once Rene's gone and once you're trying to figure out who that next franchise guy is, I think Soros has been good. I don't think at this point he's proven that he's absolutely the next guy for this franchise and that he's going to be the goalie for the next, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. I mean, if that were the case, I'm not sure the Predators go out and draft a goaltender in the first round this past year. So this is a massive season for UC Soros, and he's been great so far. And you bring up the ceiling. It's interesting to me because he's a guy where you look at his height. I mean, he's 5'11", 180 pounds. There are going to be some pitfalls that he has just based on how he's built. I mean, 5'11", how many times have we seen it? He's been beat over the shoulder, on the stick side, the glove side. The scouting report, if you're another team, is pretty obvious when UC Soros is in net. You're trying to elevate the puck as much as you can and see if you can beat him over the top. Now, it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to do it. And how UC Soros has made up for it in his career is he's incredibly athletic. I mean, he moves really well. He's always in the right position. And talking to a couple of guys that have played the position, including Chris Mason, that's what stands out about Soros is his athleticism and his ability to kind of push from side to side, crease to, or post to post, and cover a lot of ground in the net with his athleticism. But there is always going to be, I think, a little limitation there because of his size and because of how susceptible he could be over the shoulder, that you're going to have to live with that if you're the Predators, and that's going to have to be a part of the evaluation moving forward. So to me, this is a huge year. I think Saros, I mean, you've got to have a dominant year, I think, to really establish yourself as the franchise guy moving forward, because there's a ton of back pressure coming his way. Connor Ingram has been very good so far in his time in the AHL with the Admirals. You just drafted Askarov in the first round, who has been outstanding. Very early in his career, he was outstanding in the World Junior Championships as well, and projects to be a pretty high-level NHL goaltender. So if you're UC Saros, I think you know that. That's in the back of your mind, and you know that long-term, you may not be the guy. So to me, there's pressure that comes with that this year for Saros, and I think part of that also is, how do you respond to that? I think the Predators want to see, all right, you know you've got back pressure. You know that there are people down the pipe that could be coming for your job. How do you respond to that if you're Saros? And to me, that's going to be an interesting question to monitor all season long.
Yeah, the one thing about him that I've always thought, for one thing, obviously, he's, I mean, Pecorine, for his, you know, nice and soft-spoken and friendly as he is, like, he's almost like, I mean, Saros is, you know, basically like his little brother or little cousin or something, who's even nicer and more soft-spoken. You know, he's very unassuming. He doesn't seem to be, you know, affected by that stuff. You know, he seems to be very even keel, which I think is a good thing to be as a goalie, but it still comes down to, like, what's your highest level of performance? You know, because like you said, I mean, obviously the Preds have prepared for the possibility that he isn't the guy, that he is capped at a certain spot, and that maybe someone else is going to take the mantle, you know, shortly down the road. And right now, he's a restricted free agent after this year. He's making $1.5 million right now, which is, you know, he may end up making that a heck of a bargain this year if he keeps playing like this. But then what do you do if he does? That's going to be really interesting. I mean, one thing's for sure. I mean, having too many good goaltenders in your organization is not a bad thing. Yeah. Not a bad thing to have something, you know, a piece to deal to get more prospects, or, you know, if you're buying again or whatever the case may be. I mean, it's a good thing. But I'd love to know, like, in David Poile's mind, what he wants to see from Saros this year to, I don't know if it's change his mind, but maybe, you know, alter what the future course could be.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's obviously, it's a great start. He's at a .959 save percentage through two games right now. And, you know, two games, it's an incredibly short sample size. But that's going to be part of it this year, too. Like, this is the first season that he has been the guy and has been the starting goaltender for the Predators. How do you handle the grind, especially this year, when you've got such a condensed schedule and you've got, you know, you're playing so many games in such a short amount of time? That's going to wear on you. And, you know, he's going to get his breaks. Pekka, I think, still is going to play a lot this year, and he's going to have an ability to rest. But if you're Saros, you know, handling that grind at the NHL level is not really something he's had to do before in terms of responsibility that he's going to have with this group this year. That, to me, is also going to be a part of this. Like, how do you handle that? How do you handle being the guy every night coming in and playing for this team at a high level when, you know, the expectations are what they are for this Predators team, and that is, for most people, to be right on the bubble in terms of making the playoffs. Now, they could absolutely do better than that and come out and swing it out of the gates. Maybe they start, you know, 7-2 here or 8-3, whatever the case is, and you're off and running to begin the season. But the grind of kind of being the guy night in and night out, very interested to see how Saros responds to that, because that's something that he's not had to do at this level.
Yeah, and this is really the first year where there's really no question. You know, last year was a transitional year. This is a year where it's like, look, it's his job, it's his net, and Pecorine is still here to mentor him and back him up and support him. And if they do make the postseason, you know, last postseason, that was the big thing. Is Pekka or Jussi? You know, there was a big debate. I think John Hines made the right choice. I think he made the clear choice, but still, a lot of people wondering about that. Like, hey, look at all that Pecorine has done in the postseason. Are you sure you want to turn that down? I don't think, you know, if this year goes away, it's going now and we expect it to go. I don't think there's going to be a debate about that if they get to the postseason. But that's also where really where Saros will be. Well, the questions we're talking about, that's where they will be answered, right? I mean, it's can he win playoff series for you and have numbers like this at, with, you know, against the best teams with the highest pressure? I mean, that's going to dictate the future more than anything.
So with the Predators off to a hot start, 2-0 to begin the season, what do they have to do throughout the regular season this year for Predators fans to completely trust them, maybe heading into another playoff berth this year? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later today at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that for you at 8:45. You've got an opportunity to guess a goal scorer correctly for the Nashville Predators tonight. If you can do that, you'll win a prize pack. And we'll see whether or not Ryan Porth and I can have a little bit better of a performance. Joe Rexrode, 1-for-1 in Preds Pick to Click so far. Way to go, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. I expect to go 56 for 50. Oh, I can't go 56 for 56. Whatever the number is,
you're shooting for a perfect shooting percentage.
Exactly.
Whatever that number is, you can't go 1-0 without going with, whatever that number is.
That's right. You got to go 1-0 first.
Yes, exactly. By the way, congratulations to April. She was the third caller and won two tickets to tonight's game.
Nice. Very nice.
All right, April.
April going to bring the noise tonight for the Predators against Carolina at Bridgestone Arena. Now a divisional matchup. I'm excited about this. Like, from a geographical standpoint, I've always thought that Nashville and Carolina should be more of a rivalry. And obviously when you're playing in the other conference, you only see each other twice a year. So it's difficult to accomplish that. But I think this one's got a chance with, you know, kind of two non-traditional fan bases and how close you are geographically to each other. Be pretty nice rivalry this year, and it doesn't hurt that the Canes are pretty good, and if you're the Preds, you're going to have a lot of good battles with them this year if you want to make the playoffs. So I think tonight could be the start of a fun new rivalry between Nashville and Carolina.
I like it. You know, everybody around here has liked, you know, loved all the Carolina antics, post-game, things like that. I wonder if pretty soon people are going to start not liking that.
That stupid storm surge out of here.
Like the Ravens. Yeah, exactly.
Stop all that nonsense after the game. A bunch of Nashville people are going to be wearing like Don Cherry sweatshirts.
Bunch of jerks.
Bunch of jerks up there. Oh, interested to see how that goes for this team. And speaking of the Predators, Joe, before the season began last Thursday, officially, for the Predators, I put out a poll on Twitter and a question to just gauge the fan base and where they are right now in terms of their excitement and the opportunity to watch this team play again and what their thoughts were and expectations were heading into the season. And it was interesting to gauge the response because, you know, you had I'm just glad to have hockey back and I'm loving watching the Predators. I don't have high expectations for them this year, but are going to love to watch them. But there was a lot of, I think, still anger left over from the way that things have gone the last couple of years, the playoff disappointments, how they've been trending in the wrong direction. And I think it's pretty clear that a lot of the fan base doesn't quite trust this team as of yet, and deservedly so. I mean, you've heard Predators players talk about it. That's on them to change that narrative. That's on them to turn that around this year. And obviously off to a good start in that regard, starting off 2-0, and we'll see what they're able to do this week. But as you evaluate this team, if you're a Predators fan looking at this season in the regular season, what do you need to see from this group to get your trust back in this team? Is it a certain amount of wins? Is it a style of play that they bring to the table on a nightly basis? How would you go about answering that, Joe Rexrode, into what it's going to take for this fan base to trust this group again this regular season?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, trust them? You know, it wasn't that long ago that this team won the President's Trophy. And then there was full trust and they were going to go win the cup and finish the job that they didn't finish the year before. And then we saw what happened. So I think the last few years have been a nice lesson for anybody who, you know, maybe who hasn't followed this league forever, that like, there's just no guarantee. It's a lot different to me from say like the NBA, where we've seen so many franchises, like you build up, you lose, you take your lumps, you know, you're Jordan you get beat, you get your butt beat by the Pistons.
I knew you'd find a way to get that in there somehow. Way to go.
You finally beat them one time, you know, and then you win championships. I mean, the self, like, I mean, through, like, the NBA is a lot more linear that way. Hockey is just, it's so, the tournament every year is, there are surprises every year, every year. I mean, there is something that stuns you in that tournament. So, like, trust this team. I mean, it's still about the postseason, right? I mean, I think fans would be thrilled if they keep playing like this and they get to the postseason. Fans who are, I guess, realistic, but I think that the last few years have been, you mentioned anger. I mean, I think that's because of, one, you know, that obvious disappointment against Winnipeg, but then from there, a decline. So, and then just frustration of so much of last year. I did a thing before the season, you know, talking to David Poile, and, you know, you always look at the comments and these stories, and I couldn't believe how many people were really just down on stuff. And, you know, like John Hines, like, that was a terrible hire. You know, how could we, you know, I mean, it's just some, there's some real, like, just negativity right now that I think you have to get past before you even get to the point of trust.
We all know that the comments section are the place to go for positivity.
Always.
Well, but okay, but I'll say this, though. I know. The Athletic, I mean, it's subscribers. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's not like the randos who, like, just, like, you know, because sometimes comments are even people who don't even care about a team, and they just are trolling that team. I guess that could be the case here, too. But, you know, some real devoted fans of the Predators who I think are very skeptical. And I totally get skepticism. But some of the negativity is over the top to me. You know, I guess given the overall picture, but again, it's been for almost 3 years now running that there's been disappointment after disappointment.
How I would answer this question is, it comes down to three factors. One, can your stars be your stars night in and night out and play consistently? When it comes to Forsberg and Duchesne and Johansson, Arvidsson, even Josi and Ellis defensively, if those guys are playing at their top level or close to it for most of the season, I think that's going to earn trust back from the Preds fan base. I think if as a team they play with more consistency and you don't have this period-to-period, you know, mindset of, okay, well, what team's going to show up? You know, the first period, the first 20 minutes were great, but then the second 20 minutes were just horrific. If you play with more consistency like they have in the first couple games, I think that will be good to get this fan base completely back on board and trusting this team to be a playoff contender. Another one would be UC Saros. If UC Saros really takes his next step like you guys were talking about last segment, I think you combine those three factors, I think those are three big ones in this conversation.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, I think as you evaluate this team, a lot of it is going to be wait and see mode, because you have to see how the pieces come together and gel together. Now, I'll say this. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a much better start than they've gotten from some of their new guys. I mean, Richardson's been good so far. I think Nick Cousins has been outstanding so far. Luke Cunning with 2 goals in 2 games. So, a lot of the new pieces that people were very skeptical about bringing in this offseason and how that was going to translate on the ice in terms of wins and losses, I think it's gone very well so far. Now, again, it's 2 games. I fully realize that, and it's, you don't want to sit here and overreact to a 2-game sample size in the NHL. You've got to prove that over the long haul. But I do think there was kind of this viewpoint of, all right, we know that things needed to change. We heard about a youth movement heading into the offseason if you're a Preds fan, and that didn't really happen. I mean, there's not much of a youth movement going on right now, and you wondered if some of these new pieces that you brought in to add grit, did you bring in too much? Like, does that help you score goals and win games that way? And that's still yet to be determined how that's going to play out down the stretch here. But I do think some of what the Predators were trying to do, and that is become, you know, tougher to play against, become more physical, become better at winning puck battles along the boards. You know, you can laugh at that if you want to, and I understand it. that's been pretty evident to me through the first two games. Now, again, it's two games. It's about sustaining that. But that's going to have to be the way that this team plays. And if you get 30, 35 games deep and this formula is still working, I think if you're a fan, you look around and say, all right, well, it's a different approach this year. Does that translate to maybe a better approach come playoff time? I mean, obviously, we'll have to wait and see, and there's a long way to get to before we even start talking about the playoffs. But to me, it's pretty obvious through the first two games, this team is going to look different. If what that looks like in terms of the bottom line, I don't know. But they're definitely going to look different than they have the past couple of years.
Yeah, well, I agree on the newcomers. I think that's a big thing. You know, the fact that, like you said, it's not the sexiest offseason. And the young players that everybody wants to see aren't really out there right now. But if these newcomers keep playing well, you know, that's big because it's like, okay, so here's something tangible that has changed that is better. And, yeah, that consistency, I mean, it's hard to really have consistency, you know, in anything. But if they play like this and they're winning more than they lose and they're not all over the map, I think that helps. And also I think it speaks to John Hines. I mean, I think a lot of this season is the first real look at, you know, what he's doing as coach, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. You know, talking about fan comments, now I do not get in on this, but every once in a while someone will bring to Twitter like the Preds Facebook stuff. That's some interesting.
It's a special place.
So apparently, like just like raging anger that Pecorino didn't get the start the other night.
There's a portion that like are really mad that he's not starting.
Like, and they're not really Preds fans, but they're just Pekka fans.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
I mean, you'll have that. You'll have that with people. I mean, that's not just a Preds thing. That's a sports thing, I think. But there are, I mean, Preds Facebook can be a very interesting place, especially when things aren't going well.
Yeah, I just avoid Facebook altogether.
Yeah, that's probably a good life strategy.
If we could all just stop going to Facebook.
I'm about to put Twitter in that category as well. Although I know it's your baby, Joe Rexroad.
Well, it's the only thing I can handle. By the way, you know, we were talking about Chad Henne earlier. Did you see his comments after the game? His only social media is LinkedIn.
Oh, that's impressive.
That's pretty awesome, man. That is pretty awesome.
You just keep adding like backup quarterback to a part of your resume for the next, you know, couple of years. How does an NFL player operate with LinkedIn?
I don't know. It's like you were the subject of 5 searches this week, Chad Henne.
Thank you.
I don't know, but good for him though, staying the heck off all this stuff.
Yeah, maybe a lesson for all of us involved there. When we come back, speaking of Chad Henne, we'll get into the NFL playoffs and the latest with the Tennessee Titans. Our man Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.